You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Terry, did you have an egg for breakfast this morning?
Yes, I did. Had two.
You had two? Oh, what colour was the eggshell?
Well, I can't tell you because I had scrambled eggs.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Did you not look? What colour are they normally in your house?
Brown.
Brown.
Hmm.
Richard?
Well, I don't normally eat eggs because of the cholesterol content. Whether that's true or not, whether it has this cholesterol content or not, I do not know. But I love the lovely brown eggs to look at. They're so gorgeous.
We tend to favour the brown eggs here, don't we, here in the UK. But I think in America they prefer the white eggs. I'm told it's because everything that's white is pure. This is why they get their teeth whitened and healthier for them. I'm sure it's not the real reason. But I want to talk about pigmentation, egg shell pigmentation. Just before we came on air, we spoke to Dr. Stephen Portugal, a lecturer in animal behaviour and physiology at the University of London. Stephen is one of a number of researchers who studied 74 individual bird species eggs from a museum collection to see what impact shell thickness and pigmentation had on the development of the embryos.
Well, one thing that's so fascinating about eggshells is the huge diversity in colour that you see from different species from around the world. And we're just really interested to understand why there is such diversity of colour. What function does all that colour perform for the eggs? Why the diversity was our main interest.
Okay, well, why? What have you discovered?
Well, obviously, pigment has many different functions, but the one we've been interested in is how it controls the amount of light that penetrates through the eggshell and reaches the developing embryo inside the egg. And we've been trying to understand and measure how much light is allowed to pass through the shell and reaching the embryo. So that's what we've been sort of investigating so far.
So does the embryo require a certain amount of light, ultraviolet light or whatever, to grow?
It does. It has many important functions, actually. One of them is we have these little circadian rhythms that go on within our body, and these happen over a 24-hour cycle. And as babies, of course, as mammals, we get all that information from our mother's circulating hormones and blood and everything else. But obviously an egg that can't do that. It doesn't have access to its parent's circulating blood system. And actually how they learn and how the embryo develops these cycles is through access to light. And it's also important for things like bone development as well. So it's essential that the embryo gets some light, but it mustn't get too much light because then that causes damage to the DNA.
So why do birds incubate eggs then in that case?
Well, they have to get the right temperature for the development to occur. So they actually, the eggs need to be at what would be a body temperature around 37, 38 degrees for the development process to actually occur. So it's almost the same as having a baby inside a mammal, but it's happening outside the main body, if you like.
But not quite. So they're not passing on messages in the same way you'd be getting the messages internally if you were inside the womb.
Exactly, yeah. So they need another way of learning the cycles, if you like, the cycles of the day and the cycle of the seasons, etc. And that needs to come externally from the sun.
Why do they need to know the cycles when they're in the egg?
Because when they hatch, they go through this process of hatching where they go from breathing through a fluid in the egg to breathing air. And that process happens over a sort of a period of a few hours, and it's very critical for them. But upon hatching, their whole body needs to be geared up to understand these sort of light-dark cycles, when they should be expecting to be fed by their parents, when they should be expecting to rest, etc. And all these things actually control their behaviour. And especially for these little songbirds, where the young are effectively a bit useless, you know, they're sort of naked and blind, etc. These important sort of internal clocks are what tell them when they should be expecting to be fed, when they should be hiding, and things like that. So they're quite important for these core behavioural sort of characteristics.
Now, why does light affect bone development?
So a bit like, I think, for humans, I mean, I don't know too much about human biology, but if you don't get enough light, you can sort of suffer problems with your bones, etc. It's important for the process of calcium deposition and various other aspects like that, I believe. So there has to be some light which triggers the right reactions to for the calcium to deposit correctly on your bones for healthy bone development. So obviously you need the calcium, but you need some light as well for that process to occur.
Stephen, I think most people would normally associate this pigmentation with camouflage. And if you think of, say, seabirds and they're laying their eggs on the seashore and they're very, very smart to try and to kind of blend in. And again, we think the opposite, where they don't need camouflage. The birds that nest in holes and trees, that they have very much like white eggs.
Absolutely.
Well, my blue tits eggs are speckled.
Yeah, that's kind of one thing I wanted to talk about as well. But one thing that I can't get my head around around us. This pigmentation, it's in spots. It's not even across the eggshell. So that means that different amounts of UV light are passing through the eggshell. If I were to give you an analogy, is it not a bit something like sunbathing under a tree where the leaves are blowing and you're getting this kind of blotchy effect? That's what I can't understand.
Yeah, no, that's a really good analogy. And one thing that's surprising about eggshells is there can be low levels of pigment present within the shell that aren't necessarily that visible to the naked eye. So you get this spotting, you know, this maculation, as they call it, as you say, on these birds which nest on heathlands or on beaches. And you have these very heavy deposits of pigment that create spots. But also in the background colour, there is a presence of pigment as well. And these are often a different kind of pigment called biliverdin. So the protoporphyrin pigment gives colour, and or the dark colours, and biliverdin is the lighter colours, particularly blue. So often there's a mix of these two pigments. So even though you can't always see pigment, it is still present in the eggshell. But you're quite right. By having these spots, you are focusing the effect of this light transmission, much like if you were under a tree. So there is still going to be light coming through the gaps, if you like, where there's not thick deposits of pigment.
Would thickness of shell not be better than pigmentation, and also provide greater protection as well?
Absolutely. And one of the other key findings, along with the pigment work in the paper, was that birds who nest out in the open and are exposed habitually to higher light levels have both thicker eggshells and a higher concentration of pigment within that shell. But what we can find if we go to other species in different countries, for example, we find that that's not always a clear relationship. So it's not always the case that thicker shells have more pigment. It seems to be the case in birds who are nesting in exposed areas, suggesting there is a combination of factors there, as you suggest, the thickness and the pigment as well.
Stephen, we humans are rather deceived when it comes to light. We think light is more or less what is coming down from the sun. But in fact, light is only the slightest little fraction of the radiation that's coming down from the sun. Now, why should this tiny little window, a few thousand millionths of a meter long, that little window, why should that be so important? Surely the egg is getting a massive amount of radiation across all wavelengths. Why should it go to such trouble over this little bit?
Well, eggs, the embryo, really, the best light, or rather the best part of light for the embryo, is in the blue-green region. And it's actually that sort of area of light, if you like, that is most beneficial to the embryo. And recently this has been identified as a way of speeding up development in the poultry industry. So they purposefully have this kind of light, and they can make chicks hatch a day earlier, which doesn't sound much, but of course at that scale it's a huge difference. So they're interested in a very specific part of the light, if you like, and what this pigment does is it actually lets that kind of light through whilst preventing other areas of the spectrum from coming through the shell through those pigment spots. But what's also interesting is, and it's again a good point you've made, is that actually eggs can get too hot as well, to the point where the contents inside would start to cook effectively. So it's always a constant trade-off between allowing the right amount of the right light through, but not letting the egg get too hot to the point where you cook the embryo essentially before it's even had a chance to develop.
That's an extraordinary coincidence. It's mind-boggling to think of that when we evolved, we could have become sensitive to any wavelength. And the wavelength we are most sensitive to is green light, the wavelength of green light. And that's understandable because, after all, if you live in the jungle, as our ape-like ancestors did long ago, you need to be able to see enemies in a torrent of green. You need to be able to find food in a torrent of green. So we are most sensitive at telling different shades of green apart. And as you move away from the green side, we become less good at discerning things. Isn't it extraordinary that that is precisely the wavelength that is most beneficial passing through the shell of an egg to the embryo inside? How does that come about?
I think it's just a fascinating example, and one reason why we're using eggshells is that there is so much trade-offs going on throughout evolution to make everything successful for the embryo to develop, and it's probably no coincidence there that a lot of eggs historically may well have been also in forested areas, and maybe that's how it sort of developed. But I mean, when how the eggshells evolved is it, you know, it has to be thick enough to provide protection to stop the parent crushing it, but not too thick that the embryo can't hatch out of it. You know, it needs to be able to exchange gas across it. It needs to be camouflaged enough to, if it needs to be, to not get eaten, but also not too heavily pigmented that it gets too hot. So it's this constant sort of trade-off against one another, and what's interesting is how fine-tuned that seems to be to each individual species and the nest environment with which they habitually nest in.
Your research was undertaken on 75 species, I think, and they were all taken from a museum.
Now, yes.
Would they not have faded over time, the eggshells, and would this not have upset your results?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been working with, it's a fantastic opportunity we've had actually, because of course, normally with a museum collection, you can't go in there and start breaking eggs up and measuring various things on them. But this opportunity came about because of course, in the 60s, it became illegal to take bird eggs from the wild. But before that, it was perfectly legal. And as people of a certain generation are getting to an age where they're moving on, shall we say, and their families go up and empty the lofts, they're finding these egg collections and they have to get given to the museum. But they're not good enough in the museum to use as a display. So we've been able to use them destructively to measure many, many different things we've been studying. And one thing we've done is a quality control, if you like. So we've taken quail eggs that we know are were laid 2 days ago, you know, mm-hmm. and we looked at museum specimens from 100 years ago, and we found there's actually no difference. They've been stored so well, actually, that they haven't faded. And we measure things like spectrophotometry, we measure how much light's bouncing off them, we measure their glossiness, we've measured calcium content, pigment concentration, and we've done a variety of comparisons. We've also been able to do that with black-headed gulls, domestic geese, ducks, chickens, anything we can get our hands on as fresh that's in the museum collection. We've been comparing them and we thankfully found no difference, because otherwise, as you correctly say, if there had been a difference, we're not really recording anything useful.
But why would some eggs be different to others, for example, in terms of the pigmentation? Why do my little blue tits have a speckled egg in the nest, and then you take something else that might be a total block colour, like a blue or a green or a pale blue or whatever the case may be? Why is that? And they're not
speckled. What's the purpose?
Yeah.
Well, there's so many interesting theories, some of which have been tested and proven, and others which are still just theories. So, for example, one idea is that blue eggs, as I mentioned, are made purely from this pigment called biliverdin, and a derivative of that is actually something that's cycling around in all birds as a sort of something in the blood, and it's normally a sign of health. And there's a lot of theories that if a female produces really blue eggs, it means she's very healthy. And in societies where females are competing for attention from a male that's got a number of mates, he takes more interest in her eggs and provisions her better during incubation and when the young hatch than females that have lower quality coloured eggs. So that's one example of how differences in the intensity of a colour seemingly have an influence on behaviour of a parent bird. So basically, the bluer the better, you're more healthy. Why, for example, blue tits, which nest in cavities, would have spots is a question that no one really knows. And it could be a remnant of something. It may only be they've been nesting in cavities for evolutionary a comparatively short length of time.
Is there not another theory that states that one of the reasons why the pigmentation is present in these blotches or specific areas on the eggshell is because the eggshell is actually thinner there, and that with this pigmentation it helps to strengthen the egg, in that the eggshells are not evenly thickened throughout?
Yes, that's been a very interesting area of research, and it's become more interesting as engineering techniques have developed that have allowed people to actually start looking at the eggshell in that sort of detail and at that kind of level as well. So this idea is that, as you say, pigment can be used to fill in the gaps if you're running out of calcium. So if your eggshells are starting to get thin, dump a bit of pigment on it and it makes it thicker. And what we actually did with a load of black-headed gull eggs, whose colony was unfortunately flooded during some freak weather about 3 years ago, is we looked at the differences in thickness between speckled areas and non-speckled areas. And we looked at various other aspects. For example, the gas exchange across the two, was it quicker or slower between the pigment areas and the plain areas? And we weren't able to find a difference. But that may just be the case in gulls, and I wouldn't like to say if that's the case for all birds. But for the data we have, we didn't find a difference between the spots and the non-spotted area.
The bird that comes to mind for when in connection with Derek's blue tits is the house martin vis-a-vis the swallow. If I remember rightly, the house martin egg is totally white and it's totally enclosed, so the bird doesn't bother making pigment because pigment is expensive to manufacture, so you don't bother if you don't need it. That's why poulterers always have white birds. But then if you move to the swallow, well, the swallow is getting some light, he's indoors, and as far as I recollect, though you might correct me on this, his egg, or her egg, I should say, because she's doing the laying, is white with black spots appearing on it. So the black spots are an indication that, yes, light is some kind of a factor. We must make some pigment sort of thing. Move out then onto the open country with ptarmigan and grouse and things like that, and we've a very blotchy egg because there's a world in the world of light there, and we've got to block out some of it. I presume that's more or less the model you're proposing.
Yes, and it's the fact that it's not just blocking out all the light, it's controlling what's coming through. So it's almost like a bouncer on the door of a fancy club. It's going, okay, you're allowed in, but you're not, because we don't want you coming, you know, going in. So it's controlling the light that's coming through. And in fact, it may be that non-pigmented eggs in cavity nesters like a house martin or woodpeckers, etc., yes, they don't need to bother with pigment for crypsis or, you know, for camouflage, but also by having a lack of pigment, it does mean you can pick up some of the light that's coming in sort of through the nest hole or etc. to sort of entrain these circadian rhythms, etc. So it's always going to be a constant trade-off, and there's never going to sort of be one explanation for the colour. So the pigment has to evolve to camouflage and to act like a light controller.
You're arguing against yourself now, because if you want to absorb light in a very, very small area or a very low light area, you'd be black, not white, because white reflects what light there is. Why aren't eggs black? Is there a black egg in the world?
There is one black egg in the world, and it's an interesting egg because, it, as you almost just said, it goes against everything that people assumed. So we've got ostriches and cassowaries and rheas, and they always nest, particularly the ostriches and the rheas, very exposed. Now, these ratites, these big birds, flightless, and their eggs are a brilliant white. And it's thought they don't want to get too hot, they don't want to overheat, yet also they're outdoors, so you would think they should want pigment to control this light, but they have none. But then the emu in Australia has a jet black egg in one of the hottest nesting areas of the world. So for every solution I think anyone finds to explaining eggshell pigmentation for 500 species, you always find an example where you suddenly go, oh, hang on a minute,
why is that ratite like that? And, yes, and tell me, does the emu lay its eggs in an open nest?
It does, yes. But one thing that they do, which is quite, well, not unusual, but they have very, they're very good at not ever really not being on the nest, if that makes sense. They don't take many recesses from incubation. So many species are actually only one parent, you know. So if that parent needs to go off to feed, etc., the eggs are then exposed. So actually ostriches are biparental, and they don't take many recesses. So it may be that the incubation behaviour of the parent is somehow also controlling or mediating the light. Yeah, these various factors.
They say that about alligators, don't they? When they lay the eggs, they build the nest and then they lay on top of it to control the temperature to keep it at a constant. But I'm wondering, maybe the black is off-putting to predators. They see this black egg, it's out in the open, and they think, oh, I don't fancy eating that.
Yeah, that's actually one of the ideas put forward, that actually it makes it look like it, because it has a very interesting texture as well. It has a very strange, pitted, rough texture. And one of the ideas is that it makes it look like it's gone off and it's rotten. So if something looks at it and it went, oh, that doesn't look very appealing. But again, it could get complicated by the fact that many predatory mammals are colourblind, and they would use smell to ascertain if something was rotten. So again, it's very tricky to be able to pinpoint exactly why the emus are so unusual.
I've never looked closely enough, because I've never had the blue tits eggs in my hand, but I watch the blue tits in my garden every year, and they can lay up to 12, sometimes 16 eggs, you know, if they're really good. Is the pattern always the same, or have you looked at that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. So in some species, the pattern of pigmentation and the quantity of pigmentation in each egg is very, very consistent within a clutch, and it's also consistent between years. So it seems like each female has almost a distinct pattern of eggshell pigmentation and the quantity of which they are seemingly able to deposit on each egg, and that's within clutches and between years.
So, and would it vary from nest to nest?
It does vary between nests, yes. And one of the reasons it's thought that this has evolved is for egg recognition, so that you know which you know that's your egg, mm-hmm. and therefore if some other sort of brood parasite like a cuckoo or something is going to come along and try and put another egg in there, it increases your chances of spotting that's not your egg, because you're almost programmed to know what your eggs look like.
Yeah, but they're not very good. Otherwise there'd be no cuckoos.
Exactly. Again, it's a constant trade-off. It's constantly evolving. Females that are brilliant at always producing the same eggs will be less likely to be parasitized by a cuckoo, and those females that aren't so good at doing it are more likely to be parasitized.
Or maybe birds really have memories like goldfish, and they look and think, that's not my egg, and then a moment later they've forgotten.
That's very possible.
If you say the pattern is there to help them recognize their own eggs, and then this cuckoo comes along and dumps an egg in, and they look at it and think, not the same size, it's not the same colour, yes. It's not the same pattern.
Yeah, I guess that's all credit to the cuckoo, I suppose, there. But there's actually a fantastic example of how some species recognise their own eggs and some species don't, and that's in the cliff nesting auks, the alcids, and you have razorbills, who generally don't nest in quite such dense colonies as the guillemots do, so they're not used to seeing other razorbill eggs right by their nests, and they don't have egg recognition. If you take their egg out, put someone else's egg in, they come back and they go, okay, here's my egg. They sit down and they incubate. Now, guillemots nest in ridiculously densely packed colonies. Their eggs are very, very ornate, with all these sort of scribblings on, and they have egg recognition. If you move their egg 10 birds down and put a new one in there, they sit down, they go, that's not my egg, and they go looking for theirs. So there's huge variation between even closely related species to the level of which they can recognise their own eggs.
I'm just wondering, have you ever seen a cuckoo lay an egg?
I have actually, yes.
Okay, so what do they do when they're laying the egg in the nest of another bird?
Well, it's amazing. They do it in an absolute fraction of a second. So cuckoos, it's been recently discovered, have this fascinating thing where they actually start incubating their egg in themselves, if you like. It's a very strange mechanism. So they have an egg that's ready to go. You know, in theory, they could lay it now, but they hang on to it for a day, and therefore it's getting a bit of a head start in the development stakes. And then what they do is they basically go up to the nest, they very quickly deposit the egg, and it takes a matter of 1 or 2 seconds and they go again. And they actually will watch the nest for about half a day to get into sort of a rhythm of when the parents are coming back, to make sure that they go when the parents aren't there. So they're really fine-tuned to what they're trying to do with their host.
Stephen, how do you know that? How do you know they begin to incubate the egg internally when you can't actually see that?
Well, what people did, I think some time ago now, is they basically were taking destructive samples of these birds from an area that they're far more common in Central Asia and Eastern Europe. So therefore, they were able to dissect the eggs out of the females and see that there was development starting to occur in the egg that hasn't yet been hatched. So it was done via a sort of traditional anatomy and dissection, I believe.
All right. Now, the reason I asked you, have you seen a cuckoo lay an egg? I just wondered, does the cuckoo do anything in the nest to disguise the egg? But you're saying it's all so quick, it's not happening.
Exactly, it just dumps it in. And actually, they have incredibly thick eggshells to avoid being broken when the female sort of almost drops and runs, you know, so to ensure it doesn't break in that process.
Well, then let me ask you another question. Do you think that the incubating bird can detect life?
As in, they can tell if it's already started.
Yeah. If it sits down and it starts to incubate, say, well, this one is alive, I better stay here. That's what I'm just wondering, if you're saying why should it start incubating in the first place?
Well, what the cuckoo will typically do is it will wait till the female... So passerines lay one egg a day on average. So if you're, for example, a reed warbler, you have a clutch of 6 to 8 eggs to start with. Mm-hmm. On day 4, for example, the cuckoo will have twigged that there's 4 eggs in the nest already. It will then add her egg to that nest, knowing that the female will then start to incubate within a day when they've basically got a full clutch.
Could you just hang on there? I'm sorry for disturbing you. We've got to go and take Nooked, and I'll come straight back to you.
Sure.
Thank you. We're talking to Dr. Stephen Portugal. Richard, you wanted to ask something?
Yes, the fascinating behaviour of the cuckoo. One thing intrigues me. The cuckoo comes down, the laying cuckoo. She plucks out one of the eggs of her future host species, and she takes that, she lays her, drops her own egg, and then she goes away and presumably eats the egg she has taken. Now, it used to be said the birds could count, and if the bird came back and found five eggs where there had formerly been four, she would then desert the nest. But this can't be true, it is said. Then you had the hypothesis that, well, if you move one of the eggs away, put in an extra egg into the nest and don't remove the an egg in its place, then the clutch is too big for comfort for the new bird. Now, that theory seemed plausible until you start thinking, why is it implausible? Why does it matter? After all, they'll never come to hatching. The young cuckoo is going to hammer the others before they ever come out. So why should it matter? Why do you think they remove one egg and before they lay their own?
Well, I don't know how well documented that's, or how consistent, rather, it actually is that they remove an egg. So, for example, a lot of the species, or rather not the species, sorry, but the individuals that I've watched haven't actually done that. So it may be that that depends on the clutch size, or even perhaps the condition of the female. So if the female is not in top-notch physical condition, she might take the opportunity to get a free dinner and a bit of a nutrient boost. It may be that she's in a good condition, she doesn't bother, she just puts it in there. I mean, I don't know how much they sort of would look at the clutch and go, right, there's five or six, now's the time to add mine, but it seems like they basically get it right a lot of the time. So I think, from what I can gather, I don't know how consistent that taking an egg out is. I think a lot of the time they just add theirs to the mix and hope that the host female will just come back and sit on the whole clutch and incubate them. And with the cuckoo chick having a day's head start, as she was saying, the others wouldn't even get a chance to hatch. Upon hatching, the cuckoo, of course, would then get rid of the other eggs from the nest.
Stephen, going back to your research there, we've been looking at this for the last 10 or 15 minutes or so from outside of the egg. Are these patches not visual cues for the young birds within the egg to pick at?
Well, that's an interesting question. So, for example, in some of the smaller passerines, like the blue tits, etc., particularly great tits, they can have a particularly distinctive ring of pigment around the blunt end of the egg. It's called the corona. And there is a theory that's not been proven, because it's very difficult to prove. And this actually goes back a little bit to one of the questions you asked a little while ago, that is the pigment in areas where the shell is thinner. But this corona is where the chick hatches out of. So it's where the head first comes out of the egg. And there is an idea that this pattern is a bit of an indication to the chick, this is where you want to start pecking with your egg tooth. And with those thinner shells, like great tits, you can actually see the pigment spots on the inside of the shell to some extent as well. So it may be that acts as a visual cue to them. But it's very tricky to test that, because it may be you see that the pores are at that particular end for gas exchange, because that's where the head will be when this chick moves from exchanging gas through the fluids of the egg to actually breathing air. So it's quite tricky to tease out the exact function there.
Stephen, it's fascinating stuff. Thank you very much indeed. If only the birds could talk, you could ask them why.
Interview them. That would be wonderful.
Dr. Stephen Portugal, thank you very much indeed.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Please tell me if brown hens lay brown eggs only and white hens lay white eggs only, and are brown shells stronger than white shells? Thank you. Great programme, says Winnie. Richard, do you want to answer that?
Well, yes, raising chickens is an interesting business, I'm told. I don't raise chickens, never have. But if you want to keep the chickens for their posh, you breed out white ones, because they are not producing any colours at all, because colour is pigment that the body has to create to add to the feathers, and it takes longer. Everyone is familiar with the snow goose, a beautiful white goose. Now, some snow geese are blue. Interestingly, the snow geese geese that are blue take longer, about a day longer, to fledge than the white ones. And the reason is that the parents have to find more food so that these babies can
develop. Hang on a minute, why are they blue in the first place?
Well, that's another story, but most birds are, it's a lot of camouflage and stuff like that, because the snow goose is in cold places a lot of the time and it needs to be white against the snow. But most birds are coloured to some extent.
But some of them aren't.
Some of them aren't.
Is it not to do with the diet? Like the flamingos aren't. Flamingos eating something, they give them that nice pink colour.
Diet is another factor. That's a complicating factor in poultry keeping as well, because if you don't have enough of a particular food that's needed to create the particular colour, then you won't create it. Now, if you want eggs, if you're not interested in raising chickens for the pot, well, now you make the eggs, the hens, as sexy as possible. That is to say, you make them as glamorous and as gaudy and all dressed up as possible.
So you're saying the colour in the bird's feathers is to attract
Yes, but in most birds, being brightly coloured and glamorous, as with ladies and to some extent with gentlemen.
And even women and men.
You dress up and you look beautiful to attract the opposition. So if you have brightly coloured, beautifully exaggerated sexual characteristics in the hens, they are likely to produce more eggs because they are more into breeding than the bland old white.
But what about
ones
the colours? I mean, do white hens lay white eggs and brown hens lay brown eggs?
Now, in poultry situation, it's very complicated. You're giving them all kinds of food, which is, the whole thing is artificial. Everything is bred artificially. Now, I would suspect, not being a poulterer, that if the mother isn't producing any pigment for herself, when it comes to her creating her eggs, I would suspect that she is not creating pigment, which is the last thing to go on an egg before it's laid, is the pigment. And the mother has to create that and add it to the surface of the egg before it comes out. And I would suspect that if she's not in the business of producing pigment, it's likely that the egg has no pigment and is therefore white.
Brown hens bigger than white hens.
On balance? No, I don't think that. Well, you can breed them for bigger or smaller, I suppose. It's all artificial in captivity. You breed for the size that best suits your
purpose. Certainly the hens you see run around the farmyard are usually brown ones. The white hens are the ones we imagine that are inside in barns. Mm. And yet all the eggs aren't free-range eggs. And yet in Ireland, we have a greater desire to be eating brown eggs than white eggs. And they're not all free-range eggs. And yet the eggs you buy in the shop are brown. We should ask people who have hens who actually know what they're talking about.
John Murphy has been on. And John describes himself as an incubating consultant.
Oh, very good. He's the man.
Only he can't take a call. But he does say the following. He said that an emu does not lay a
black egg.
Black egg. He says no bird lays a black egg. They lay an olive green egg that will turn black in an egg collection.
Well, now that's interesting.
So if you went to the nest and took
now
it
we'd have to bring
green.
Back.
We'll have to bring back
Dr. Stephen Portugal.
Yes,
but
Stephen.
As I said, we pre-recorded that item before we came on air, so we can't get it back this moment.
That's
but we will pass that information on to him
because
he was pretty sure this guy has done all his work in this area that there is one black egg that's laid and that it is.
But if he hasn't taken it out of the nest there and then, by the time he gets it could have gone black as it's in a collection.
One of these old diseases that's always in my head is that you'll never find a black egg anywhere. And it's interesting, until today I never heard of a black egg, and that was Stephen said that the emu was black. Now that's interesting.
I do know Eric Dempsey has an egg collection and he has a black emu's egg because it is black. I've seen it. It looks black to me as I look at it. But I did not think Eric collected it from there.
Right.
Yes.
Can we call Eric?
Yeah, Eric Dempsey.
Because he's a guy who's probably going to know this kind of stuff. Well, it seems that you think, and I'm talking to the listeners, you think I said here in the UK. As part of my introduction to Dr. Stephen Portugal earlier, I didn't say here in the UK, I said here and the UK. But at any rate, now the guys outside have got the offending piece of tape and they're going to play it and we can see, because quite a few people have texted to say, time to move out of Ireland or do a night class in history and geography, Derek. We're not part of the UK. But anyway, have a listen to what I said. I'm hearing it for the first time myself. Okay, here we go. We tend to favour the brown eggs here, don't we, here in the UK? But I think in America they prefer
the
white eggs.
Here in the UK? Couldn't be clearer. Here and the UK. Can we play it again? Here and the UK.
We tend to favour the brown eggs here, don't we, here in the UK? But I think in America they
prefer
the white
the
eggs. Can you slow it down just to prove that I said here and the UK? We tend to favour the brown eggs here, don't we, here in the UK?
But here I think and in America the UK.
I just didn't pronounce the D bit at the end. Here and the UK.
You probably said here and the UK.
Well, here and the UK. I was speaking
and,
very...
It's probably said Anne, I suppose, and people hear Anne, and so the A bit, but the D wasn't there.
The
perhaps.
D wasn't there. Well, if you play it again, I'll put the D in. The slow one. We tend to favour the brown eggs here, don't we, here in the UK? But I think in America they prefer the
right,
white.
Right, Grant. So there we are. So thank you very much indeed for that. I didn't say here in.
Okay, I may not have pronounced the entire word. I may have said an instead of and, but I said here and
isn't
the UK.
Great people are listening so attentively to
terrific.
Every word you utter.
I can't say anything anymore, Ina, as you know. Now, earlier in the programme, we spoke to Dr. Stephen Portugal from the University of London about eggshell pigmentation, and talk turned to the colour of emu eggshells, which he described as black. We were all surprised. Subsequently, John Murphy was on. He described himself as an incubating consultant. He said that an emu's egg is not black, that it's a kind of an olive green colour that turns black in an egg collection. So we decided to get some independent expert opinion on the matter. Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland. Niall, is an emu egg black, olive green, or what colour is it?
The simple answer is yes, they are. So they can actually be quite variable in colour. The most normal colour for an egg, for an emu, it's almost like the colour of the skin of an avocado. It actually looks quite like an avocado in many respects. It's quite a dark green with almost a metallic hint to it. But in collections, particularly when they're being incubated, as time goes on, the shell oxidises and actually becomes blacker. And people have collections who have eggs that have lasted for maybe
decades. But when laid, when being incubated, when hatching?
They're green.
Green. Dark green.
Dark green. Very dark green.
Thank you very much indeed, Niall. Much appreciated.